Chapter 29. Thames Waterman. For there were Thames Watermen at that time in some unknown rat hole by the river, down lanes and alleys on the other side of the strand. As to any other person, to meet him or obstruct him, Lyons Inn was dreaming, drunk, maudlin, moody, betting, brooding over bill discounting or renewing asleep or awake, minding its own affairs. Mr. Testator took his coal scuttle in one hand, his candle and key in the other, and descended to the dismalest underground dens of Lyons Inn, where the late vehicles in the streets became thunderous, and all the water pipes in the neighborhood seemed to have Macbeth's amen sticking in their throats, and to be trying to get it out. After groping here and there among low doors to no purpose, Mr. Testator at length came to a door with a rusty padlock which his key fitted. Getting the door open with much trouble, and looking in, he found no coals, but a confused pile of furniture. Alarmed by this intrusion on another man's property, he locked the door again, found his own cellar, filled his scuttle, and returned upstairs. But the furniture he had seen ran on casters across and across Mr. Testator's mind incessantly, when, in the chill hour of 5 in the morning, he got to bed. He particularly wanted a table to write at, and a table expressly made to be written at, had been the piece of furniture in the foreground of the heap. When his laundress emerged from her burrow in the morning, to make his kettle boil, he artfully led up to the subject of cellars and furniture, but the two ideas had evidently no connection in her mind. When she left him, and he sat at his breakfast, thinking about the furniture, he recalled the rusty state of the padlock, and inferred that the furniture must have been stored in the cellars for a long time, was perhaps forgotten owner dead, perhaps. After thinking it over, a few days, in the course of which he could pump nothing out of Lyons Inn about the furniture, he became desperate, and resolved to borrow that table. He did so, that night. He had not had the table long, when he determined to borrow an easy chair. He had not had that long, when he made up his mind to borrow a bookcase, then a couch, then a carpet and rug. By that time, he felt he was in furniture stepped in so far, apostrophe as that it could be no worse to borrow it all. Consequently, he borrowed it all, and locked up the cellar for good. He had always locked it, after every visit. He had carried up every separate article in the dead of the night, and, at the best, had felt as wicked as a resurrection man. Every article was blue and furry, when brought into his rooms, and he had had, in a murderous and guilty sort of way, to polish it up while London slept. Mr. Testator lived in his furnished chambers 2 or 3 years, or more, and gradually lulled himself into the opinion that the furniture was his own. This was his convenient state of mind when, late one night, a step came up the stairs, and a hand passed over his door feeling for his knocker, and then one deep and solemn rap was rapped, that might have been a spring in Mr. Testator's easy chair, to shoot him out of it, so promptly was it attended with that effect. With a candle in his hand, Mr. Testator went to the door, and found there, a very pale, and very tall man. A man who stooped, a man with very high shoulders, a very narrow chest, and a very red nose, a shabby genteel man. He was wrapped in a long threadbare black coat, fastened up the front with more pins than buttons, and under his arm he squeezed an umbrella without a handle, as if he were playing bagpipes. He said, "I ask your pardon, but can you tell me apostrophe and stopped, his eyes resting on some object within the chambers. Can I tell you what? Apostrophe apostrophe asked Mr. Testator, noting his stoppage with quick alarm. I ask your pardon, apostrophe said the stranger, but this is not the inquiry I was going to make. Do I see in there any small article of property belonging to me? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Testator was beginning to stammer that he was not aware, when the visitor slipped past him, into the chambers. There, in a goblin way which froze Mr. Testator to the marrow, he examined, first, the writing table, and said, "Mine," apostrophe then, the easy chair, and said, "Mine," apostrophe then, the bookcase, and said, mine, then, turned up a corner of the carpet, and said, mine, apostrophe apostrophe in a word, inspected every item of furniture from the cellar, in succession, and said, mine, apostrophe apostrophe. Towards the end of this investigation, Mr. Testator perceived that he was sodden with liquor, and that the liquor was gin. He was not unsteady with gin, either in his speech or carriage, but he was stiff with gin in both particulars. Mr. Testator was in a dreadful state, for according to his making out of the story, the possible consequences of what he had done in recklessness and hardihood flashed upon him in their fullness for the first time. When they had stood gazing at one another for a little while, he tremulously began, sir, I am conscious that the fullest explanation, compensation, and restitution are your due. They shall be yours. Allow me to entreat that, without temper, without even natural irritation on your part, we may have a little apostrophe drop of something to drink, apostrophe, interposed the stranger. I am agreeable. Apostrophe, Mr. Testator had intended to say, a little quiet conversation, apostrophe, but with great relief of mind adopted the amendment. He produced a decanter of gin, and was bustling about for hot water and sugar, when he found that his visitor had already drunk half of the decanter's contents. With hot water and sugar the visitor drank the remainder, before he had been an hour in the chambers by the chimes of the Church of St. Mary in the Strand, and during the process he frequently whispered to himself, mine, apostrophe apostrophe, the gin gone, and Mr. Testator wondering what was to follow it, the visitor rose and said, with increased stiffness, at what hour of the morning, sir, will it be convenient? Apostrophe apostrophe, Mr. Testator hazarded, at 10? Apostrophe apostrophe, sir, apostrophe, said the visitor, at 10, to the moment, I shall be here. Apostrophe, he then contemplated Mr. Testator somewhat at leisure, and said, God bless you. How is your wife? Apostrophe, Mr. Testator, who never had a wife, replied with much feeling, deeply anxious, poor soul, but otherwise well. Apostrophe, the visitor thereupon turned and went away, and fell twice in going downstairs. From that hour he was never heard of. Whether he was a ghost, or a spectral illusion of conscience, or a drunken man who had no business there, or the drunken rightful owner of the furniture, with a transitory gleam of memory, whether he got safe home, or had no time to get to, whether he died of liquor on the way, or lived in liquor ever afterwards, he never was heard of more. This was the story, received with the furniture and held to be as substantial, by its second possessor in an upper set of chambers in Grim Lion's Inn. It is to be remarked of chambers in general, that they must have been built for chambers, to have the right kind of loneliness. You may make a great dwelling house very lonely, but isolating suites of rooms and calling them chambers, but you cannot make the true kind of loneliness. In dwelling houses, there have been family festivals. Children have grown in them, girls have bloomed into women in them, courtships and marriages have taken place in them. True chambers never were young, childish, maidenly, never had dolls in them, or rocking horses, or christenings, or betrothals, or little coffins. Let Gray's Inn identify the child who first touched hands and hearts with Robinson Crusoe, in any one of its many sets, apostrophe, and that child's little statue, in white marble with a golden inscription, shall be at its service, at my cost and charge, as a drinking fountain for the spirit, to freshen its thirsty square. Let Lincoln's produce from all its houses, a 20th of the procession derivable from any dwelling house 1/20th of its age, of fair young brides who married for love and hope, not settlements, and all the vice-chancellors shall thenceforward be kept in nosegays for nothing, on application to the writer hereof. It is not denied that on the terrace of the Adelphi, or in any of the streets of that subterranean stable haunted spot, or about Bedford Row, or James Street of that ilk, a gruesome place, or anywhere among the neighborhoods, that of done flowering, and of run to seed, you may find chambers replete with the accommodations of solitude, closeness, and darkness, where you may be as low-spirited as in the genuine article, and might be as easily murdered, with the placid reputation of having merely gone down to the seaside. But, the many waters of life did run musical in those dry channels once, among the inns, never. The only popular legend known in relation to any one of the dull family of inns, is a dark old Bailey whisper concerning Clements, and importing how the black creature who holds the sundial there, was a negro who slew his master, and built the dismal pile out of the contents of his strong box for which architectural offense alone he ought to have been condemned to live in it. But, what populace would waste fancy upon such a place, or on New Inn, Staple Inn, Barnard's Inn, or any of the shabby crew? The genuine laundress, too, is an institution not to be, had in its entirety out of, and away from the genuine chambers. Again, it is not denied, that you may be robbed elsewhere. Elsewhere you may have for money dishonesty, drunkenness, dirt, laziness, and profound incapacity. But the veritable shining red-faced shameless laundress, the true Mrs. Sweeney in figure, color, texture, and smell, like the old damp family umbrella, the tip-top complicated abomination of stockings, spirits, bonnet, limpness, looseness, and larceny, is only to be drawn at the fountain head. Mrs. Sweeney is beyond the reach of individual art. It requires the united efforts of several men to ensure that great result, and it is only developed in perfection under an honorable society, and in an inn of court. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.